Isn't that what we were asking for? What is the conclusion that we've been reached after studying chapter 16? What is the conclusion? You think about that one? What was the conclusion that one should reach after studying chapter 16? How about you, Vishwak Chandra Prabhu? Did you read that one? What was the conclusion that you reached? No conclusion. Just confusion. Yeah?
To be able to get free from lust and greed of the following scriptures and the essential scriptures to Krishna.
Anyone else have any ideas about the conclusion? Don't be a demon. Right. Why? Sounds awful.
Well, it's kind of a twofold conclusion. One is that if one doesn't follow Shastric injunctions, then he doesn't achieve happiness and perfection as a supreme destination. And if one does follow them, then he achieves perfection.
Yeah, that's it. I like that verse a lot. Nasukam na param gatim. Yeah, and the Shastra Vidim Utsrija Vartate Kama Karata. Huh? Yeah.
The last verse, which says, therefore, one should know how to act on this.
Yeah. That's practical. Prescribed duty often means according to the Shastra. That's what it usually it means, but the practical application of that for us is Shastra and Guru and Sadhana. That's a nice point. Now, I'll read the verse. Verse number 1-3. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation. That's not freedom from anger and renunciation. That's freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, freedom from envy, and from the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharata, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. In the purport to this verse, Prabhupada explains, in the beginning of the 15th chapter, the banyan tree of this material world was explained. The extra roots coming out of it were compared to the activities of the living entities, some auspicious, some inauspicious. In the 9th chapter also, the devas are godly and the asuras, the ungodly, are demons, were explained. Now, according to Vedic writs, activities in the mode of goodness are considered auspicious for the path, for progress on the path of liberation, and such activities are known as daivi prakriti, transcendental by nature. Those who are situated in the transcendental nature make progress on the path of liberation. For those who are acting in passion and ignorance, in the modes of passion and ignorance, on the other hand, there is no possibility of liberation. Either they will have to remain in this material world as human beings, or they will descend amongst the species of animals, or even lower forms of life. In this 16th chapter, the Lord explains both the transcendental nature and its attendant qualities, and the demoniac nature and its qualities. He also explains the advantages and disadvantages of these qualities. Now, in the 13th chapter, before the 15th chapter, which is the previous chapter to 16. In the 13th chapter, the basic principle of transmigration is explained. And that's that same verse that I keep quoting again and again, that karanam anguna sangasya sarasad joni janmasu, that according to one's association with the modes of nature, one transmigrates, meeting good and bad in different species of life. Then, in 14, the nature of the forces, the forces of material nature that carry one and condition one within the bodies are described. In 15, if we remember our tree, the Vedic tree, or the tree of the material world was drawn, and how the living entity in the reflected portion of the material world, the nature of his transmigration from branch to branch to branch to branch to branch to branch to branch is described in the 15th chapter. And the purpose of this transmigration and the purpose of the Vedic scriptures have been given as to bring us to the unperverted, the real, to reality where the real existence takes place in the spiritual world, and take us to the point, in other words, of surrendering to Krishna. But most of the verses were leading us to that point, and they explained a lot about transmigration, of what's going on as sarasad joni janmasu. Now the top part, closer to the spiritual world, births in that realm are births high in the modes of material nature, first class cells in the material world, affected, bodies affected by the mode of goodness. In the lower realms of the tree, downward, are those bodies very much affected by ignorance. This chapter describes, paints in the two extreme aspects of transmigration, the godly and the ungodly, the demonic. These are different births. The benefit of the godly birth, the divine birth, which is infused with the quality of goodness, is, as one would imagine, is the ability to go further than goodness, to go further than godly, and go to that spiritual world where one, once going, one never returns. That is the benefit of godly birth. But here, in this chapter, both extremes are painted into the picture of transmigration. Now there are 1, 2, 3 sections in this chapter. Section D, the third section, is misnumbered on your paper, so you might as well change that to C. Where it says 21 through 24, that section is written as section D, but it should be section C, obviously. And above that, where it says, I believe, section 7, it goes, the demonic nature in section B, 7 through 20, it goes, there are three parts of that, 1, 2, and 7. So, I think you'll be able to figure out what you should change that 7 to. I thought you'd be able to figure it out. It's pretty clever. Okay? Now, these three sections, one, a basic introduction to the divine, those qualities of the mode of goodness like that, and which lead to liberation. And then, a very stark, concise explanation of the demonic nature. Then, in section B, a more detailed description of the demonic nature. And then C, the point of it all, how to escape from demonic life and therefore elevate oneself and go back home, back to Godhead. The conclusion is, as we find out, a very important conclusion, that the basic difference between divine life and demonic life is that the
the divine souls follow the Shastra and therefore go up, and the demonic do not follow the Shastra, and therefore the result of their life is horrible for themselves and for others. So these two conclusions, there's two conclusions. One is avoid the demonic by giving up the three gates to hell, and secondly, accept the process of elevation through following the Shastra. So we'll start reading. Who said that? They're right, basically, they're the two points in section C. Give up the gates to hell and accept the Shastra. So verse 4. The first three verses described what? That's a question. The first three verses described what? Yeah, those who are going up. The divine qualities. Then text 4 describes those of a different nature. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demonic nature, O son of Prita. Prita. Now I'm going to read the purport to this because it's a condemnation of so many of the qualities that I have. And I don't, I'm wondering if it's still, when I read this purport this morning, I got very embarrassed actually. In this verse, the royal road to hell is described. The demoniac want to make a show of religion and advancement in spiritual science, although they do not follow the principles. They're always arrogant or proud in possessing some type of education or so much wealth. They desire to be worshipped by others and demand respectability, although they do not command respect. Over trifles, they become very angry and speak harshly, not gently. They do not know what should be done and what should not be done. They do everything whimsically according to their own desire, and they do not recognize any authority. These demoniac qualities are taken on by them from the beginning of their bodies in the wombs of their mothers, and as they grow, they manifest all these inauspicious qualities.
What did you say about my mother, right?
This is the benefit of a Western birth, especially a New York birth. We're trained in each, systematically trained in school in each and every one of these qualities. Huh?
This is the goal. This is the goal.
Yeah. But ultimately the result of this goal is described. Tanaham dvishata kruran samsadeshu noradama. The Krishna pushes these species down, down, down again and again. The transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation, whereas the demoniac qualities make for bondage. Do not worry, O son of Pandu, for you are born with the divine qualities. Now, yeah.
What about the Ajami, who was born with divine
qualities? But why? Yeah. The three gates leading to hell. Due to bad association, anything could happen. And even the royal road is fraught with danger. Due to bad association is so important. Therefore, associate with the Shastra and Shastra people, and don't associate with Trivedam, Rakshedam, Dwaram, Nashanam, Atmana, Kamas, Krodas, Tathalobas, Tasmaretat, Trayam, Trajet. Don't associate with these modes, which means associating with people who possess these modes of nature, lust, anger, and greed. One time, it was in Melbourne actually, when Prabhupada was asked, in 1974, that Prabhupada had a program in Melbourne City Hall, Town Hall, and one devotee at the end asked Prabhupada, how can I become more sincere? And Prabhupada said, his answer was, how could you become a drunkard? If you want to become a drunkard, you associate with drunkards. If you want to become more sincere, associate with these devotees. They are sincere. Now, we'll finish this last verse and then go into the demonic nature. O son of Prita, in this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called the divine and the other demoniac. I have already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now hear from me of the demoniac. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done, which is also a quality of the mode of ignorance. No, actually, it's a quality of the mode of passion. Cannot discriminate to be what to be done and what is not to be done. And in the mode of ignorance, whatever should be done, he doesn't do it, and whatever shouldn't be done, he does do it. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. Now this also naturally follows the information on the modes, because these are qualities, demoniac qualities are coming from the mode of passion and ignorance. They say that the world is unreal. This is their realizations. With no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanence. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of life, of human civilization. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds and thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. So it's quite interesting how in the second chapter Krishna recommends that one tolerate his desires if one wants to become peaceful and happy. Just like the ocean is undisturbed, although being fed by countless rivers, similarly one should tolerate the rivers of desires as they enter into our consciousness. But here, the binding of the living entity is described as a network of hundreds and thousands of desires. That one whose intelligence is not fixed in Krishna will always be many-branched, filled with all these desires, and therefore his determination cannot be strong. Rather, one should learn to tolerate desires. But here, the demonic, they're bound by their desires. They take their minds seriously, they identify with these minds' desires, and they are lost. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future, more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity. And thus, I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. Self-complacent and always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige, they sometimes proudly perform sacrifices in name only, without following any rules or regulations. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others, and they blaspheme against the real religion. And then the results, after describing the mentality and the activities of those demons, Krishna describes the results. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest amongst men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Attaining repeated birth amongst the species of demonic life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually, they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. And then, after presenting what happens to the divine in section A, and then presenting what is the result or what happens to the demoniac in section B, Krishna tells us in these last verses, he gives us our choice. He gives us clear directions about which path we want to take. So if one wants to go to hell, here are the ways. And if one wants to avoid it, which is Krishna's instruction, there are three gates leading to this hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. The man who has escaped these three gates of hell, O son of Kunti, performs acts conducive to self-realization, and thus gradually attains the supreme destination. So, transmigrating on our tree over here, we have some choice in human life. Do we want to go up or do we want to go down? Krishna has given us this choice. So here, if we want to walk through the gates going to hell, he's given us the directions. Yet, because the intelligent man, or rather the sane man, will not want that, Krishna is advising to give up the three gates leading to hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give them up. And contemporary civilization, being demonic, it's cultivated lust and anger and greed. It's cultivated. Actually cultivated. In some European countries, is there anyone here from that country? No, from in Sweden. When I was there last, they told me that in the public schools, they have little rooms where the boys and girls can go into and explore, learn. And this is in the first grade, second grade, like that. Because they don't want them to repress anything. 5, 6 years old. They train them in lust. This is the definition of demoniac civilization. And anger, therefore. And when lust is unsatisfied, anger develops. Greed. Train, constancy. So therefore, Prabhupada called this school system slaughterhouses, because it's training to line up to get your head chopped off and go to hell again and again and again, pushed there by Krishna, personally, perpetually, out of his mercy. So, one escapes, the man who has escaped these three gates of hell, O son of Kunti, performs acts conducive to self-realization and thus gradually attains the supreme destination. And how to get there, how to perform acts conducive to self-realization, what is the very nature of his acts? He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. So here the contrast is set up, starting with the demonic, and Krishna is advising us to perform acts beneficial that will elevate us to the supreme destination, param gatim, and it's not by not following the scriptures, but rather, that's in 23, but in 24, one should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. So whatever position one is in, one should act, one should do on the negative side, he should give up lust, anger, and greed, and on the positive side, he should act according to the rules and regulations of the Shastra. And this is the basic distinction between theistical and demoniac existence, the acceptance of the Shastra, and acting accordance. The demonic mentality is by nature whimsical. I am the authority. I do what I want. I am the Soham, I am that person. I am God. That's the basic demonic mentality. I am the authority. I am God. What I want, what I do, etc. And the basic devotional mentality is I am surrendered to higher authority, Krishna. Coming down to Sadhu Shastra Guru. Okay, a short chapter. It's quite simple. Let me just see if there's any points that I'd... Yes, Paul.
I think this chapter is very clearly illustrating the reason why Krishna continues to instruct Arjuna. For a little more information, you already but Krishna wanted to warn him from the dangers to strengthen his dedication to the Shastra and Guru. So he gave him hints that there is so many dangers on the way. So this chapter, as we've seen, is good enforcement.
He surrendered after 10, actually. In the middle of 10, he's when he says, Param Rama, Param Dhamma. He's accepting Krishna's position as the Supreme Lord. Then in the beginning of 11, he says, I'm not under illusion, but still, please show me that form that you pervade and support the entire universe. But Krishna is filling in the rest of the philosophy here.
About the dynasty. You were saying the 15th chapter discusses the nature of transmigration. You said the nature of something.
Yeah, transmigration. In a few places. One, by describing the tree, how the living entity is going around this tree and he can't understand the actual form and nature of this tree because he's too much entangled in it. And also, after describing Mamai Vangso Jivaloke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, that the living entity is eternal, my partner, Vasa, the Angsa of Krishna, then he describes Sarira Yara Vapnoti Uchap Ukramad Ishwara. That the living entity is gathering a material body and he's trying to enjoy this material body. And he's transmigrating and thus. Srotram chakshusya sparshanam cha granam rasanam eva cha adhisthaya manasthayam vishayan upasevate. And he's trying to enjoy his senses based on the gross eyes, ears, nose, touch, taste that he's gathered based around manasthayam, based around his mind, which is the center point for his desires. And then the next verse explains that those, the Buddha Nanopashan, that the ones who are bewildered, they cannot see this. But this is the nature of transmigration. These are the basic rules of transmigration. And then the basic ways one goes are up and down from human life. Human life is a junction. So if we use it to cultivate lust, anger, and greed, then we go down, and down, and down.
In this diagram of the Zanishi, we say, now, the further we are away from the spiritual, it may appear that we're more highly situated materially. Yeah. As we get higher up in the branches, it's such that our case is better. But actually, you know, someone who has a godly birth, that one who is unsuccessful on a personal path, you know, either take birth in a well-to-do family or educated or transcendental, if he's progressed a little further. It seems like that's a little flaw in the point that I'm making.
What's the exact question is whether where is the most sense gratification available?
You were saying, yeah, as one moves up in the tree, further away from the roots, up into the branches, and the sense gratification increases.
I didn't say sense gratification exactly, but it's probably the type of sense gratification. It's unshastric, it's illicit. It's like Krishna is God in the real tree, and the further you go away from that, you're God. Krishna is enjoying with the gopis, and you want to enjoy the
as much illicit activity as possible. That's the further away. It's a perverted reflection of the highest, is the lowest. Even the demigods, they enjoy very sophisticated sense gratification, but it's all shastric. While the further away one gets, it's unshastric, and leads them further, further down. Yeah. Does anyone have one of the small Gitas with them? That has the bunny tree, yes? So. It's a tangle. Any other questions or points? Yes, there are.
How are you going over the connection between the intersection
and the intersection? Oh, because I had asked you to think about that. Iti guyatamam shastram. You know that? You know the meaning of that? Idam. But this is the surrender to Krishna is the confidential meaning of the shastras. This is the secret that's included in all the scriptures. So, even though the scriptures may gradually elevate us, the purpose is to bring us to the point of surrender to Krishna. So here, in the end of 16, really said, but not quite as directly, that the purpose of the scriptures, we follow the scriptures for the point of gradual elevation towards liberation. But the ultimate liberation is surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Good question.
What was it added to your question?
The question was, I had asked yesterday to connect the part, to think about the similarity or the connection between the end of chapter 15 and the end of chapter 16. In the end of chapter 15, who remembers, who heard what I said? It's the end of the summary of Vedanta Sutra.
So one knows Krishna as the Supreme Person, he's very still engaged in his devotional service, and that's the conclusion, the summary, the conclusion of Vedanta.
Right. And then the next verse explains it. Iti guyatamam shastram idam upva maya naga. That this is the guya, this is the secret or the purpose of all the scriptures. And then one who knows this will become wise and his endeavors will reach perfection. So this conclusion that we should surrender to Krishna is the purpose of the shastra. In this verse, it explains that the divine souls, they follow the shastra for the purpose of gradual elevation, which ultimately will mean surrender to Krishna. So every chapter really brings us to the point of surrender to Krishna through different paths and different modes of explanation. But this is the purpose, sole purpose of the Bhagavad Gita, to bring us to the point of surrender to Krishna. And to give up everything else to that surrender. Even though Krishna is saying to follow the shastra, there are so many different shastras, and Krishna doesn't really want us to take the gradual path, because no one will be able to do it. No one will succeed. What he wants from us, really, is all this dharma, pritya-ga, pritya-ga, give up. And just get to the conclusion of surrender. Even though so many different paths and the whole Vedic system and pretty much the whole universe and the tree of the material world and the shastras and the Vedas and the Varnashrama and opulences and this and that and Vedanta and transmigration and supersoul realization and so many things are given, so much knowledge and the process of knowledge and the Brahman platform, we're asked to ultimately give it up. And just surrender to Krishna, which is the perfection of it all. And that will automatically bring us to liberate us from the control of the modes of material nature as well.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
So there's not
the books, there's the books. Who had a chance to read that essay, Elevation to Goodness?
Good.
It's so clear that to transcend, you need this. Because when the pushings of Raja and Tama are there, they just force us to act improperly. Force us.
It seems to be that there's some difference of opinion within the society of devotees as to when the devotional service begins. So some of them may say that, well, even though one isn't situated in Mother Dhritya, he's offering service officially, he's still doing devotional service, although it's not this.
But the answer to that, and I guess I can only say my opinion, but it's pretty clear that by the mercy of the spiritual master, we are allowed to render pure devotional service. He takes our impure devotional service, and by his offering, it's pure. But technically speaking, no one will say that they're devotees. It's fine to be devotees, but the devotional service really begins on the purified spiritual platform. Because just think about it. Unless you possess these qualities, how can you serve Krishna? Everything you do will be contaminated by false ego. I think everyone really will agree with that.
Just like Krishna now is asking Arjuna to engage in warfare, which involves some material skills, like activities in the mode of passion. But because he's asking him to do that, and he takes it up, that's when it's transcendentalized. There's a powerful effect. So we were just starting to talk about this, before you mentioned the whole aspect of book distribution. So one could be on a transcendental platform, utilize sales techniques, which for the most part, from a material standpoint, would be viewed as being motivated. But the devotee is situated on a transcendental platform and doesn't have any attachment to the results, but also is endeavoring for the results of Krishna, then it won't go awry.
Yeah. Because he wants to make it a sweet offering for Krishna. It's a devotion that will make everything work. He wants the people to become Krishna conscious, and he'll do it as nicely as possible.
So in other words, it was more the motivation that really caused the problems with that. And some of the techniques, sure, but they were the tactics.
Prabhupada wanted the book distributed. So any technique any technique he was ready to start with.
Yeah.
But the devotees, due to their devotion to Prabhupada's order, should perfect their techniques. Not that, now I know how to teach, now I know how to distribute books. Because anything dealing with people, you never really feel like you master, or anything, any service that you're really into. If you never feel like you master it, your devotion is shown by your devotion to perfecting it. That's your devotion, that's part of your devotion to Krishna, because this is your devotional service in Krishna consciousness. This means this is my devotion. This is my offering to Krishna. So, therefore, when we make an offering to Krishna, if we have devotion, we want it to be as perfect as possible. He has everything, but what does he want? The devotion. Asnani paratatmana. He will take it, he will accept the offering, even if it's a leaf of fruit, a flower, or water, if it is made with devotion. Bhakti paritam. So the manifestation of our devotion is that we do the service carefully and not become sidetracked. But he has his order, so we have to make sure it's in line with his order, not whimsical. Like Prabhupada once told me, they want to serve me the way they want, but I want them to serve me the way I want. So the order can't be whimsical, then it's not devotional. So it has to be based on devotion, and then the devotee, because he has devotion, he wants to protect it. And this is his meditation, and the surrender to that order is that which
keeps him transcending the modes of material nature, his enthusiasm to please Krishna.
He was described where the different activities were performed by different parties. And so Dorothy asked him, well, what about the book distribution problem? Who will do that? And Prabhupada said, let the Vaishnavas do that. He said three things in different places, but that was the best.
Of course, it's hysterically.
that
must have caused everyone to say, well, what Prabhupada really meant was.
But the point is that a lot of times what goes into the book distribution here, particularly in the United States, is the miracle happen. It will be very difficult for them to achieve the kind of results that allow the service to be performed. The same thing you mean was that we shouldn't use techniques that are from the mode of passion. Anyone can safely say that we shouldn't use techniques from the mode of ignorance.
No, what I really meant, I don't remember exactly what I said, but if we get entangled in the mode of passion, it'll ultimately bring distress. If I know what we were talking about, it's not the technique. I think that was the conclusion. It's not exactly the technique, but the consciousness.
That point should be very clear, because I tell you, it's caused a lot of problems in the United States where the boys know that they can't do anything, they can't do sales techniques. Because why would you just.
Well, it's just reaction.
Yes.
The other side, I can do anything, say anything, because I'm transcendental! That's reaction. So gradually, as we mature, we'll hit it right on in the middle. That we understand that we're not transcendental and we can use everything in Krishna's service, but we should be careful what we use in Krishna's service because we have to keep our consciousness fixed on Krishna in devotion, and we can't do that unless we're somewhat filled with Krishna's. Otherwise, so many different motives enter and increase within our consciousness, and gradually those needs will grow and choke the people. The activity really influences our consciousness too. That's why Prabhupada said, when one devotee said, I don't feel like bowing down, should I bow down? He said, yes, bow down and the feeling will come. So if we're using the technique of, big quotas and, getting everyone jacked up sufficiently so they go out there and do big mega bucks, it's gonna have if we use that people's consciousness, it's gonna probably affect them because very few people are actually that transcendental. Because the modes of nature are fighting for supremacy always. So the external environment, and people are surrounded by passion and ignorance, right? We're out there surrounded by passion and ignorance. We're not always quite lotus leaves untouched by the water, rather we tend to interact with the environment. So I think we still have to be careful.